Boy, if it's energy you want, you're going to get that today. This is so fantastic. Thank you so much for joining me, Veda Percussion Live. This is exciting because when I get a chance to share information and introduce people and just showcase them at this site, this is equally as exciting for me. Today, I've got this artist that, as you have just witnessed, has got energy, has got a focus of delivering passion in every note she plays. Would you please welcome with me, Mona Tavakoli. Bring her on.
Hi, Dom.
Mona, I love watching you play. You've got such a beautiful spirit and an energy and an honesty and just a humility when you play, where it's all about the audience.
Thank you so much for that. It makes me emotional that you say that. Thank you. It's like 100%.
Well, I deliver to you what you deliver. I mean, it's really kind of how I'm reading it. And I think what I love is the commitment to the song. You know, we speak about serving the song.
Yes.
The reason why we serve the song is because we're serving the listener.
Right.
So the song is just the tool that we're using to reach the depth of that listener. And when I watch you play, and I've seen you on several on the Today Show several years ago, I watched you there. And, you know, I mean, as I've kind of followed your path of what's happening, I always get a kick out of you because you are so honest in how you play and how you believe music should be delivered. I thank you for that.
Thank you, Dom. I'm so humbled. I'm such a big fan of yours. And I mean, obviously, like, you are inspiring thousands all over the world. And I'm one of those people. So thank you for saying that.
Well, it kind of goes around full circle, because as you inspire me too, it just allows me to keep this energy of what we do in the percussion field. And fortunately, having a company like Veda that allows us to have this opportunity to share this, this is what it's all about. So I want people to kind of really get to know you and understand your beginning of where you've come from, what you've done,
yeah,
where you started. First of all, what got you involved in playing music and percussion and drums, and how did this all start?
Well, first of all, thanks for making me so emotional. I'm just going to dab my emotional head, which is good. It's good to have feelings.
Yes.
Right, Dom? Sure. Validate me, Dom.
Yes, here.
I'm just kidding. No, it's just a little joke. Okay, it's kind of a long story, but I grew up in an Iranian household in San Jose, California. My parents were playing a lot of Persian records growing up, beautiful rhythm, 6-8 rhythms. And when my parents moved here from Iran, they, and I'm going to make this really quick. They put me in beauty pageants and they thought that was a very like American thing to do. And my mom thought, for my talent, because every young beauty pageant contestant has a talent. Some of them sing, some of them dance, some of them, you know, do gymnastics, whatever. My mom was like, we're going to make you do Persian dancing. So she gave me these tiny finger cymbals and she taught me how to do like a traditional Persian dance. So I was 7 years old and that was my first percussion instrument. And I was playing to the rhythm and dancing. So I think that's kind of like the initial, like the root of my passion for percussion. And then when I got to elementary school, there was the elementary school band and my eyes would instantly go to the drummer. And so as I was growing up in elementary school, watching the sixth grade band perform, I knew as soon as I was in the sixth grade, I would be playing the drums. So that's sort of like started the path.
I love it. First of all, now that I'm in the screen here, yes. I absolutely validate emotion. I wear it on the sleeve of my shirt.
I know this. That's why I needed the verbal affirmation.
I am. Listen, I believe way more in EQ, emotional quotient, than I do in IQ, because emotional quotient allows people to connect very, very quickly. And once they connect soul to soul and heart to heart, the mind will follow.
Dom, I don't want to, I'm just telling you, I'm interrupting you because that's how I feel about you.
But you do this just in your music. You allow this emotional string to go out and people grab onto this and you start tugging on that string and you bring them closer into your playing. So we got to go back to that person, exactly right. That Persian music that you heard is the core of your ethnic, you know, soul.
Yeah.
What kind of music were you listening to at that time and the rhythms? What kind of rhythms were in that for you to steal from?
Literally the ghir, we call it ghir in Farsi, which is like the rolling sensation that when Persian people dance, they ghir, the shaking, the rolling. And I mean, that was what was happening in my family's house. They were playing albums, we were playing records. And then family would come over and you'd have your Persian food and then bezan o berakhs is what they would say. And you just like somebody, like an uncle would grab like the back of a pot or something and start playing these 6-8 rolling rhythms. And the women and the men both, they would get up and start dancing. And they try to get you up if you were seated. Dom, if you came to my mother's house, you would be dancing after she fed you a delicious tadir, and then you'd have to dance my mother.
I have Italian, I've got Greek and Middle Eastern blood in me. So believe me, I am not shy to hop onto a table and start dancing with anybody. I'll go that far for sure.
There you go. So that was sort of like the cultural aspect of my, the groove inside of my body. But then as I was sort of growing up in America, you know, my older brother, was listening to a lot of rap and hip hop. He was listening to a lot of metal, Rush. And then I got really into Madonna, like really, like I would draw in the mole, you know, and then put a bow on my head. And so my first cassette tape was Madonna's True Blue.
Oh, interesting.
So that was sort of like, that's where my like pop sensibilities and just desire for, I would watch Madonna, I would watch Tori Amos, and these were artists that really like would captivate me because they weren't just delivering words, you know, they were sort of like delivering this experience that you believed, like I believed them. And so for me, it was always like, okay, I got like really quick to the thing that was true for me, I think, because that's what I was attracted to in other artists.
So was there any kind of a educational journey that you had? Were you in this, you know, you mentioned the school band, did you start learning about percussion and lessons and what happened?
Yeah, this is so wild because when I got to sixth grade band, Mr. Tyler, who was my hero and such an inspirational teacher, he was actually a trumpet player. But we had a pretty cool little like drum section, percussion section. I was learning how to play snare drum and bass drum, But really, he was teaching us the basic stuff.
Okay.
So there was a lot of like peer-to-peer learning of like, hey, try this instead. And then once I got to junior high school, we got into jazz band and stage band and that kind of stuff. And that was, again, a lot of peer-to-peer, being inspired by the other drummers and so, just rooting each other on.
So was drum set a part of that? So drum set's a part of that, and you're learning all different types of percussion.
Yes. Yeah, I started as a drum set player. Mm-hmm. And then I went to high school, and we had a music program there. So it was like marching band, pep band, orchestra, very small music program, but I was so into marching band, like really, really into the wool uniform. And I really like choreography with groups. So we would do like, you know, marching in concert. I just loved it. I loved marching band. So yeah, that was sort of high school. And then I went to UCLA for college and I joined the UCLA marching band. And then I became the UCLA mascot, which is another story for another time, Dom, when you come to my mother's house. And then I started dancing flamenco.
Oh, interesting.
And that's where I learned the cajon is from there.
So interesting. The music school program seems like it was a very important part of your upbringing musically, that you adapted into this program. You were meeting other musicians that were your peers, some people that were older than you that were playing. So you were taking from teachers and students and learning. Well, that music school programs, they're really important.
So important. And at that time, I remember them using a lot of language like feeder program.
Right.
So it was like the sixth grade was the feeder to the junior high program. Because that junior high program was really good and award winning. Like I remember we would go to like the Reno Jazz Festival and we were competing, which was so wild, you know? And then when I got to marching band, we were sort of like we had a smaller footprint as a marching band, but our drum line was dope. We had a great drum line and I learned so much and I got to hang out with people that loved Neil Peart, which was so cool for me because my friends weren't into Neil Peart, but people on the drum line, they were into Neil Peart.
They knew
Neil. I'll tell you what. Yeah.
Neil really influenced so many people. I got to know Neil and meet him a few times and just a beautiful person. And just, you know, way, way too young for us to lose a great mind like that. And literally a great mind like that. Neil, he happened to be in drumming and the lyrics that he wrote. You're also, listen, you're a percussionist, a drummer, but you're a singer and a songwriter. So how did that part of it evolve with you?
Yes, that is such a gift of my band Raining Jane that they've given to me. I met Raining Jane, the members, while at UCLA. And Chaska Potter, all of Raining Jane, Becky, my Chaska, they are my sisters. But Chaska has a real like hand, her and her family have a real hand in me singing because I had pretty good pitch, pretty good tone, and I could sing a lot of unison. I was singing a lot of unison, and Chaska one day was like, you have to sing the third part. Like you have to sing, you have to do that. And I was like, ah. And she just kept kind of like, I don't want to say bullying, but like light pressure to keep finding the third. So she helped me really like commit to ear training. And then with Raining Jane, because we had two lead singers, it was ripe for harmony. You know, it was this beautiful thing. And actually Becky sings too. And Becky has a great voice. So all of us can sing. And actually on the latest Jason Mraz record, Look for the Good, us four, we're the backup vocalists / dancers / I do shake a kibasa. I'm not going to lie. So Raining Jane has a lot to do with me singing and drumming. And I think because I started like at 19 singing and drumming at the same time, it just sort of became like embedded in my DNA as a performer, you know?
Boy, that's such a ear training by singing. And I sang when I was younger. It was just so great to hear pitches and intervals and be able to understand timing and blending the sound of your voice while you're playing.
Blending, yes.
That skill is a real, you know, musical, you're arranging and composing while you're in the midst of singing. Boy, that's a great, great skill to have.
Yes. Yeah. I agree with you. I really do. And I think it's the, you know, as drummers, we always talk about the best drummers, in my opinion, are the ones that listen, have the biggest ears. And so when I see drummers that are singing, I think you have to listen differently because you do have to get in the mic and you do have to blend and you have to hear pitches. You don't just keep a groove with the bass player, you know? You're also, you have to be so sensitive to the melodic line. And I think that's why I end up loving these situations with singer-songwriters, because I get to really serve also their thing, their vocal part, their lyric, their melody, and then hold it down or give it space. I love that. And I think that's a gift that, another gift that Raining Jane has given me.
So is guitar or piano in your life as a composer? Do you?
No, not really. I think I can play like the hell out of an E chord if you want me to get down for you, Dom. And that's, again, another gift Becky Gebhardt gave me from Raining Jane. I can also dazzle you with an E minor if you like. But it's, no, I actually, when I'm in a writing situation, which I just had a writing session with my friend Natalia Zuckerman, who's a brilliant singer-songwriter artist, and we did it over Zoom, and we started building. I was like, I think I want to play this kind of groove, and then she already had one verse, and I was like, let's try this melody for the chorus, and it's organic like that. And most of my writing in my life has been with Raining Jane and Jason Mraz. And that's a beautiful thing, because us five are sitting together and we're creating the whole landscape of sound at the same time together, you know?
Absolutely. So you're Raining Jane, you're performing, you're writing, you're getting involved with them.
Yeah.
So now you're starting to really network and meet people.
Right.
This is opening up a whole nother side of you connecting with more musicians. When did Sarah come into Sarah Bareilles?
Sarah Bareilles is a friend from UCLA. And actually, it was a Raining Jane thing where we were all playing sort of the same venues, like Westwood Brewing Company, which I think RIP. I don't think it exists anymore. But we all would play Westwood Brewing Company, or there's a talent show at UCLA called Spring Sing that we've all participated in. And so the musical community, you know, we all would just kind of like, you'd kind of see each other or cheer each other on or be in competition at the Spring Sing. And so Sarah, we just would end up meeting at these venues and stuff. And there was an instant like heart connection. She's so wonderful, wildly talented. Obviously everybody knows that, but she's such a heart forward, loving, soulful presence. And so we became friends, and then we became neighbors. We lived in Santa Monica at the same time. And then Chaska and I were in her band for a while. And then she ended up going and opening for Maroon 5, which also there was connections there from UCLA. And Raining Jane, we had booked our own college tour at that same time. So we left, bought a van and trailer and started touring around the country. And then Sarah was like on her way, on her rocket ship up. Yeah.
What was this like? I love the story of getting the van and hitting the road and traveling and booking your own dates. What was that like to organize all that and be involved with that?
I still can't believe we got to do that. Yeah, like, yeah. I still can't believe at my age now, I still can't believe that we were babies, you know, and we just like believed in what we were doing, and we believed in each other, and we all just like helped each other create this thing. And it was like, I remember telling my dad, like, we want to buy a van. Will you co-sign a loan? And he's like, what are you talking about? Like, this was not their plan for their Mona, you know? Like, I was going to go get my undergraduate in economics at UCLA. Then I was going to go to business school, and then I was going to become an HR executive or something, you know, like this path was not how they imagined it. And I think to go at like whatever 23 we were, you know, and we bought this van and we bought a trailer, and they're like, it's just you four women. You're going to drive around the country. Is that safe? And we were like, we don't know. And mind you, like, this is before cell phones. I mean, that makes me sound like I'm 108, but you know, like this was before like Google Maps. This was MapQuest. We were printing out our itinerary. And if there was like a road closure or an update to the whatever, you better believe we were going in circles for a while until we'd be like, well, this isn't correct, MapQuest.
I love the courage and the sheer bliss that that needs to do that. Now, if you think it makes you look like before cell phones at 108, I did this at 23 in 1976. With the band, I bought a van and we hit the road. And this is even before MapQuest. This is when we had Rand McNally maps.
Word. Yes, I do know that too.
And you opened up a book and you found the state you were in, and then you found the county, and then you opened up this map while you're driving. So there's something about the calling that you have, and that is much greater than the results of what the concerns would be. Where is there trouble out there, or what could happen that could be wrong? That was not even a concern. You seem to like just, you had the calling, you got in the freaking van, and you went.
Yes, dumb, yes. You are speaking my heart right now. Yes.
So the situations that you were in, especially with a female band, what was it like that you experienced? What was it?
There's so many good stories, Rainy Jane stories, but I think it was just like the promise of experience, the promise of adventure. Like, we knew, at least we had each other. We had these songs. We had our instruments. And we were just going to go do this thing. Yeah. And I think that gave us so much. It gave us so much. And it bonded us for life. Like, even if we get in, like, I don't think we'll ever get into a big blowout because we haven't yet. And we've been a band for 20 years. But I think when conflict arises, we're like, dude, I smelled your smells for a decade in a van. Like, I think we're going to be okay. You know? And mind you, these are some of the best people you're ever going to meet. You're going to meet them too, probably at my mom's house when we have Polo Choresh, and you're going to dance with my mother.
My mouth is watering. My mouth is freaking watering. Absolutely.
Oh my gosh. But you're going to meet these women from Rainy Jane. You're going to be like, how is it possible that these three angels got together with this Persian lady and they're doing this thing? You're not going to believe it.
Well, the three angels realized that there was room for a fourth angel.
Oh my gosh. Don't you dare, Dom.
When that level of angels with wings gets together, there is a momentum that cannot be stopped at all from that calling. So you're on the road, you're learning these experiences, you come back. So when was Andy Grammer in there somewhere? Where was Andy Grammer in there?
Yeah, so Andy was, gosh, I want to know how that happened. Andy, I met like 2014 or 13 or something. Is that true? I don't know. He actually called me. He got my number from somebody and was like, hey, I'm doing an acoustic show and I know you play cajon. Do you want to come do this with me? And we just hit it off. He's really soulful. Do you know him at all? Do you follow him?
I do follow him, and I have heard some of his stuff. I mean, he's just a very deep artist.
Dom, you will love him. He is heart, soul. I mean, I honestly can't get over the fact that I am working with the most soulful, in touch, conscious people. Like, I don't even get me started about Jason Mraz, because I will not stop talking about him. But truly, like, Andy Grammer is one of those artists that is doing good in the world. And he does it not just through music, but he does it with his love and care of people. So he's also a person you should spend time with at my mom's house.
I hope the table's big enough, because there's going to be a lot of us when we get together.
Listen, when you know Persian people, they're going to bring a box for you. I'll bring my cajon. You could sit on the cajon. Don't worry, there's room. Not now, because my parents canceled Thanksgiving because of COVID, but in the future.
Smart of them to play it safe, you know, in the course.
Oh, hell yeah.
In the world that we live in right now, it's absolutely crazy. Yeah. But, you know, you seem to have a way of, you have this, you're like a magnet. I mean, you are able to pull people in and just your positive spirit. So where did cajon come in? Where did that happen where all of a sudden you started incorporating that into the kit and you stand up and you're playing? Where'd all that come from?
Yeah. The cajon came through flamenco when I was dancing flamenco at UCLA. Right. And the girls in Rainy Jane saw me playing the cajon at a flamenco recital. And that's how they found me to play kit for their band. And at that time, it was the name of the band was Chrysalis. It was a different group of girls. Always been an all-female band. And wow, I'm so emotional, Dom. What's happening? So is it allergies? Is it just allergies? I have no feeling in my heart. It's just allergies. Okay.
You are making me emotional too. I just love the fact that the emotion is on the sleeve of your blouse. It's just special.
This is the emotional sleeve of my blouse. So basically then they saw me playing the cajon, and then I got into the band, but I was playing kit for a long time until Raining Jane bought me a cajon for my birthday 1 year, maybe like 2002 or something, from a really small maker. It was like Pop Percussion was the name of the cajon. And it was this awesome guy just making like very limited amounts of cajons. And I started playing it, and it was like love at first sight. And I had such an emotional connection to it because it wasn't just, you know, I love playing with sticks and I love expressing that way. But then all of a sudden my body was on the instrument, not just sitting on a throne. The throne was my instrument. And so I was dancing on the cajon in a different way. And it felt very emotional for me. So that ended up sort of like making its way into the Raining Jane set. So we would do like an acoustic set. And mind you, Dom, like nobody was playing the cajon really, except this one guy, Patrick, that made the cajon for me. I hope that's his name, Patrick. I didn't see anybody else playing it. This is like 1999 or something, right? And so everybody would come up to me and say, did you invent that? Did you make that? Is there a microphone in it? Is it, da, da, da? You know, there were so many questions. I was like, no, I'm just able to pull out these really deep bass tones and get like a nice snare sound because I was a drummer. I was a kit player. So I was applying everything from drum set to cajon. And then I had to figure out how to use, I was trying to just be creative. So then I would take my brushes and I would start playing brushes, and I couldn't play match because it was just ergonomically so weird. So I started playing double traditional.
Yeah, yeah.
And so it was like, I was just sort of having to be super creative with this thing where there was no resources. And the girls in Raining Jane were like, yes, this is dope. And then audiences were reacting to that. So we play like, you know, a set of songs with kit. And then I'd come up to the front of the stage and play cajon. And it would be like, oh, what the heck is that lady? What? You know? And so that was like sort of, that really became a part of my story because I just kept following the heat of that thing that was bringing me so much joy. And then I could see was bringing other people a lot of connection and joy and curiosity, you know?
Yeah. Yeah, yeah. I think that the curiosity part is fantastic, but I see this as maybe a solo album for you entitled Love at First Sight. Man, oh man, I can see this clearly. Love at First Sight. This would be fantastic. This is really what you did, but you pulled from this drum set stuff. So what other drum set players, influenced you? Were there other drummers influential? Like who else?
Cindy Blackman, Santana, is now a Vader artist.
Is she not the best? Oh, I know her for 35 years. Oh,
please.
Great.
Don't even, if I ever walk by her, I will melt into the floor. She was one of the women that I saw doing it, but doing it at such a high level.
Yeah.
And yeah, she's total inspiration and hero. When I started really playing and being on the road with Raining Jane, we were listening to a lot of Sleater-Kinney, which is a band out of Olympia, Washington. And there's a drummer named Janet Weiss. And she is such an incredibly musical drummer. Like I love her drum parts. I love her drum parts. And she didn't have a history of educational drumming or, you know, growing up. She just was like passionate about playing the drums and being in this band, and you could tell, you know, she just like gives it away when she plays. And I really admire her drumming as well.
So you're pulling from these different drumming ideas. You're yeah. involved with your singing, your whether it's drum set or whether you're standing, whether it's cajon, you're writing. So you got there's a lot to you, Mona. There's a lot to you. This probably needs more than an hour, but the point is there's a lot to figure out in that incredible head of yours. So going on your plan. So tell me about Jason now. You meet up with him because he's a deep environmentalist. You went down to Antarctica. I want the whole freaking story.
The whole story? Do we have time for this?
We'll make the time.
Oh my God. Okay. I'm gonna try to get to some good parts. Here we go. Raining Jane's on tour. We're in the van. Everything's fine. We're having a great time. We're making okay money. Everyone's surviving. Then we started doing this college market thing, and it was awesome. It's called NACA, for those of you who've ever heard of that. And we're just booking our own gigs. We're setting up our own stuff. We're doing our own thing. And we're getting some awesome opportunities through NACA because colleges book a lot of music. Mm-hmm. And so once we opened for Vanessa Carlton, do you remember her?
Yes, absolutely.
Making my way downtown. Okay. Things like that.
Yeah.
We opened for Jars of Clay in Oklahoma at a college. We started getting these really cool opportunities for this independent band with no management, no agent, nothing. We're just doing everything ourselves. And we're getting these cool opportunities because we're showing up for the gig and we're delivering a great show and we're like nice people. And so we're getting these opportunities. And in 2006, I think, this amazing director of student activities at Redlands College, University of Redlands, Ilaria Pesco, she calls me and was like, have you ever thought of opening for Jason Mraz? And I'm like, uh-huh. Like this is now he has that hit record, The Remedy, I Won't Worry My Life Away, that album. Yeah. And I'm like, yes. And I had actually thought he would be a great fit for us to go on tour with because just musically, content wise, and like spirit, like he's really lighthearted, kind of silly guy from what I could see on the television. And I was like, yeah, that would be amazing. And she was like, yeah, I think we're going to get him to play our bicentennial celebration. And I'm like, okay. She's like, I think we want to bring Raining Jane to open. And so we were like, great. So we were already on tour and we had to make like a special flight back to California to do this show. And it was a 30-minute set and we were first of four. So Dom, you know, you've been in the biz long enough to know that generally the headliner is not watching the opening band.
Absolutely.
Right?
Never.
They're usually like, they're probably not even at the venue yet when you're like playing your gig.
Yeah,
so we're like, okay, no expectations. We're probably not going to meet him. It's not a big deal, but this is so cool that we get to be on the bill with this guy that we really admire. So we get there and we're like setting up and like Jason's already there. And he's talking to Matt Nathanson. Matt Nathanson was also on that bill, who is a dreamboat. I love Matt. And these two guys are just talking in the hallway and we're like, hi, walking by. And they're like, yeah, great. We're excited to see you play later. And we're like, yeah, okay, cool. So we play, we're on stage and we're playing our set. And this is when I was like playing my kit. And then I would go to the front of the stage and play cajon. And I look over to stage right? Is that right? Oh my God. I've been off the stage for so long. I don't even know. So I'm looking that way. And I see that Jason Mraz is standing there and I just was like, holy cow, I can't believe this guy, the headliner, is watching us. I couldn't believe it. And we got off the stage and he was like, you guys, that was so awesome. And he grabbed Becky, who's our bass player, who also plays sitar. And he said, hey, started talking to Becky for a while. And at this point, Dom, Raining Jane is like, two of us would go sell our own merchandise and the other two would stay on the stage and break down. And so Becky and Chaska stayed on stage, broke us down. I went up to sell merch with Mai. And after the show, we waited in line to meet Jason and have another interaction with him. And he was so lovely and so sincere, which has never changed. And he was basically like, you guys should be my band. And we were like, say again. And he was like, I'm going to go to, and by the way, Dom, again, you know the business. Like, people just, they talk trash, man. Yeah, it's just like, all the time. People just are like, just in your face. They'll be like, you're the best. And then like 10 minutes later, they're like, dude, that guy hates you. You know? So long story short, he was like, hey, I'm going on a trip for a while, but when I come back, let's get together and let's at least write a song or something together. And we're like, okay, sure. Yeah. Here's my card, because I was booking the band at that time. And I said, here's my card and just, you know, be in touch, like whatever. So in December of that year, that show was in August, December of 2006, he wrote me an email and was like, season's greetings from Jason Mraz. And I honestly thought, this put me on his mailing list. But he didn't. He didn't put me on his mailing list. He was writing me a personal email being cute. And then once I realized this guy was writing to us to invite Raining Jane to go to his house to write a song, I just cried. I cried and cried and cried because I knew it was true. I knew the circle kind of had been completed from the feeling originally of like, I really think this guy would be cool to go on tour with or collaborate with somehow. Then for that woman to say, hey, do you guys, have you ever thought of opening for Jason Mraz? To us being at the show, to him watching us play, to him taking my card and then inviting us to his house. Do you have chills, Dom? I have chills.
I've got chills on top of my chills. Now, think of this. You have to really believe in fate and destiny. And fate and destiny are two words that I'm researching. I'm working on a book now, my next motivational book, which is called Owning Now. And I'm researching fate and destiny. Fate to me is out of our control, that a door is opened up, that opportunity is given to us without us having anything to do with it. Destiny is where we take charge of our own free will and we notice the opportunity and we decide to then follow through with the door that has been opened. So I believe I have more control over my destiny and less to no control over my fate. Okay. When I hear this story, it really is that. Fate put you in a situation to open the door, but then you had the business card to give to him at that moment. That was destiny screaming of, I don't know where this is gonna go. It may go nowhere.
Right.
I'm gonna give you my card anyway. Just because I'd be a fool not to.
Right.
So destiny then allowed that to happen. So really, the story is a story of a beautiful connection, that synchronicity is in the air.
Totally. And I think
the music business has that more so than we realize, especially more than any other business, because we're all living our passion. We're all on stage, honestly. It's not about making money as it is about just kind of expressing myself in a way that can lift other people. And if I do what I love doing, the money will follow.
Are you reading my mind or my journal while you speak?
I am in that brain for sure, because what you're offering is really a remedy of success for anyone that's hearing your voice right now. They are absolutely understanding that it is possible.
Yeah, it's possible. It is.
When you have the courage to go, you know, take a loan out on a van and just hit the road and just start learning and put yourself in the momentum of opening your heart up to learn.
Yes.
What you did and what you continue to do.
Wow, Dom.
Now you hook up with Jason. Amazing, right? Now you hook up with Jason. You hook up with Jason. You're doing this thing here. Now all of a sudden, you're on the freaking Today Show. You're on now. All of a sudden, you're like, "What the heck is this roller coaster ride?"
Yeah, yeah. Well, it wasn't that quick, right? Because he had just—he was about to put out his next record. We sing, we steal, we dance. I got to get the order of that. It's like okay. Well, it's the album with "I'm Yours" on it. It's the album with "I'm Yours," and that also had "Lucky," and it had "Make It Mine" on it, and it had so many hits, that album. Yeah. And so right when we met him, that next year, he was gone for like 2 or 3 years. So, you know, we got together, we wrote a song, and actually one of our songs made it on that record, a co-write with Raining Jane called A Beautiful Mess.
Oh, really?
And so that was so exciting. That was so exciting because all of a sudden I'm Yours hit, and then the whole album started doing really, really well. And Jason's like, he's like you, a global ambassador. And so he was cruising around the world, just like spreading these messages of love and high vibrations, good vibrations. And, it was coming back to him, you know? Okay. So then when he came back, after that tour, he started working on his next record, which was Love. And it was in 2012 that I started playing with him as a duo. So I was sort of like, we had our little name was called the Duo Decibel System. You get it, Dom? You're so delightful. It's unbelievable. I literally posted this morning that I can promise you that Dom will delight you and that there will not be any stage fog in my living room. Those were the two promises I had. Well, so thank you, thanks for delivering.
You've delivered because it is you that is delightful. So, I mean, this is so fantastic that you make, you bust me up. So tell me about now the Rock and Roll Camp for Girls in LA.
Yes.
How this started, between co-founder and co-director, with what you're organizing with it. And listen, you've got some great organizational skills. You are one, listen, you're doing the HR job that your parents wanted because you're doing it inside the music business at your own pace.
Ah, wow. That's great. Can you write that down and send a nice card to my parents?
I'm going to tell your parents when I see them at dinner, and I'm going to tell them in person so they get the full picture. Absolutely.
Full circle, baby. Full circle. I love it.
How did this start?
Okay. So the Rock and Roll Camp for Girls LA, it basically started when Becky Gebhardt and I found out about a camp in Portland called the Rock and Roll Camp for Girls Portland. And we decided we were going to drive from LA to Portland and volunteer at this this summer camp for a week. And Becky was going to teach bass. I was going to teach drums. And we went, we drove, it's like 17 hours from LA. We did this road trip. And this is before Raining Jane started touring, right, Becky? So we did this thing, and it was so impactful. Because I got to see that this is an all female identified camp. Yeah. So basically it's mentorship. It's all about mentorship. And it was never about, and I know you're so into this, it's about expression. It's not about like technical wizardry. It's about, can I give you the tools to get closer to yourself?
Right.
Do you know what I'm saying? And music is a vehicle, and high fives are the currency.
Right,
and like, how can we do this? And if you bring more like-hearted people together to hold this space for each other, what is that impact going to be? And so we experienced that in Portland. And it was like, well, at some point, we're going to have to bring this to LA. Because LA, the music scene at that time, which we were experiencing, was like very male-dominated. And like, we were just sort of like trying to create our own community of people who were like us. We weren't trying to like become famous or rich or whatever. We were just like you said, we were doing it for the love. We were doing it for the community. So we brought in 2010, we had our inaugural year. And basically Becky and I are the co-founders of the organization, but Raining Jane are the founding mothers of it. And we have this amazing, Beth is our, we have a woman named Beth Shore, who is the mayor of Awesome Town. Shout out to Beth. And we have a year-round planning committee of amazing, dedicated individuals that are making sure camp happens every year. And so this year, actually, we did our first online camp. We called it Rock Camp Express. And instead of being together in person, we had this online camp experience, which was, what's a good word for it? It was new. It was new, but 100% so happy that we did it and created space for our girls and our volunteers to be together.
And it's a different level of communication as we're doing right now. It's a different level of
totally.
Listen, you can deliver passion and music in many different ways.
Yeah.
Where we are right now because of COVID, we're delivering it in a different way, but it doesn't necessarily mean the passion is any less deep.
Yeah, I agree with you.
It's just taking it in a different way. So that's also
totally
with this campus is fantastic to keep it going. And yeah. You're uniting people, you're inspiring people, and you're inspiring people to aspire. This
Cool. Yeah.
The inspiration is when you inspire someone and you motivate them. Yeah. Aspiration is when they walk away and they inspire themselves. Ooh. That's when you inspire someone to aspire. And that's what you're doing with this camp, because it's the reaction. And you've got people that are commenting here that have been at the camp in the comment section that are going wild over the support of what you've done. And you're continuing doing it. Now, tell me about Antarctica.
Okay, I will. But I wish I could see the comments. Is there a way for me to look at the comments or no? Not really.
I don't
not on this.
Is it upper corner? Do you see the word that says comments? You have that on yours?
Oh my gosh, I can see it.
All right.
Oh my gosh, I'm going to cry. That's so cool.
You can see it.
Meg, Ellen, Jen, Jane, Serena.
Oh boy, look at this.
Oh, I can't look at this because I'm going to cry. Okay, cool. Friendship. I freaking love you guys. Wow. Dave Shepke in the house. Dave Shepke, do you know this guy? This drummer, Dave Shepke?
I do.
Michael Bram? Michael Bram is the drummer. Oh my God, I love you, Michael. Leroy? Amy's in the house. Okay, I got to stop looking because I'm going to talk to other people. Hi, Dom. Hey.
Now you can see it there. You'll see the comments that are there. So Antarctica, you get to Antarctica, you're there. I mean, environmentally aware is what Jason is. You've joined that. What happened there?
Okay, so Jason got invited to do this National Geographic experience in Antarctica. And the idea was to bring all these people that are active in environmental justice to come together and talk about, it was called Climate Reality Project.
Right.
And so there was like amazing people from all over the world working on environmental justice. And Jason was invited because obviously he's a environmental advocate, but also he was going to share music at the thing. And so he asked me to come and be his buddy and play music and songs and learn about what's happening in the world. And so we flew to Patagonia, and from there we got on the boat, and then I proceeded to get sick for about 10 days. I think that was the entire trip. I got seasick. No, I wasn't sick the whole time, but it was wild. And we went on a boat to Antarctica, and we got to like, while we were en route, we were learning from climate scientists and people who are making legislation around the world. It was so incredible, unbelievable. And Jason and I, yes, I'm with my cajon on a Zodiac. And I remember they took us out there. It was like a total treat that they let us go out with our instruments because we couldn't get too close to the glaciers. Because they said that low end of the cajon, which I got a lot of bass on my empty box, if you get too close to the glacier, it could like crumble. And so can you imagine in your lifetime, you're playing a box for a living, and then all of a sudden they're like, don't bang your box too hard. You might, the glacier might crumble and you will be a problem of the environment.
Al Gore would be at your door taking care of you. That's for sure, man. He'd be screaming and yelling.
I'll tell you what. And Al Gore is such a wonderful man, and he's doing such great work in the world. And he let us just all come together. He organized the event, which was super cool. And so, yeah, that was Antarctica. And actually, I jumped in the water, Dom. I jumped into the Antarctic waters.
Cold water.
Yes, and I'm a desert person. I don't know if I told you earlier, I'm Iranian.
Yes.
I'm a desert person. And Jason was like, you have to jump in. People were starting to jump into the water. And there was a team of people there to like save you and catch you, you know. Just like a fun hobby, I guess people do, is jump into ice cold water.
Are you fully clothed? What's the hell's going on?
Well, I was wearing like little swim trunks. I didn't have a swimsuit because I didn't imagine like going to Antarctica on a climate reality project would lend itself to wearing a bikini. You know what I mean? So I didn't have a bathing suit, but I had these like little short exercise shorts and a tank top. And I honestly, I wasn't going to do it. And Jason's like, if you don't do it, you're, I mean, you know, I mean, we were seeing people much older and in worse health. Anyway, he inspired me to do it. And actually, he's a total show off because he did it twice. But I did it once and it was life affirming. And we made this, we have a song called Bottom of the Sea that we wrote with Raining Jane. And him and I decided that on our downtimes before between all the lectures and stuff, we would shoot a music video on the boat. So we have this little music video and we got to like play it on tour and yeah.
What stories? I mean, what wonderful stories. So tell me about now this Africa trip that the State Department was involved with.
Yes. That was with Natalia Zuckerman and Chaska Potter.
Oh, interesting.
And we put together a little trio called the Northern Lights. And the U.S. State Department, you know, does a lot of outreach around the world. And this was it was called American Voices Abroad. And we got to go to Africa in four different countries and just play some concerts and collaborate with students for a month. So we went to like Mozambique for 1 week, got to go to Malawi for 1 week. It was singular. It was a singular experience. And I got to do it with two of the most wonderful people. So that was a really real gift.
When you think about the experiences that you have had and that you are currently having and the experiences that you can't even imagine that will have, you got to kind of put this all in a perspective. This is a very, very wonderful roller coaster ride that you're on. That what's amazing about it is you're in charge of the ride, just so you know. And because of your spirit and how you connect with people and just your loving friendship and fellowship, you're bringing people in that are opening up even more opportunities. So hence you're opening up more doors of fate for you to have an incredible destiny. This wow. really is powerful. In all of this here, you're on stage when you're standing up and you're playing. What are you holding in your hands? You use the Vader Manhattan 7As?
Yes.
I love those sticks.
Oh my gosh.
What else? And you got other, you got a lot of other Vader toys that you're playing with.
Yes. Oh my gosh. I feel so lucky that Vader does so many cool, innovative percussion sticks, essentially. Yeah. But does it seem fishy to you that the Cajon brush resembles my hair at all? Is that so questionable to you, Dom?
When are you
I have one. Honestly, should we talk about it? Should we call the guys?
Listen.
Should we call them?
Creativity, inspiration comes from many places, and from the top of your head, that baby is in action.
Oh my! Oh my goodness! This is the second time I've stood up for you during this conversation. I mean, these babies.
How great!
These are the best. I have my whole like stick caboodle here. Do you have a stick caboodle?
I have. Yes, I've got several of them for sure.
Let's talk about this tiny guy. Isn't it so? I mean, listen.
But just the balance of that plastic feel is just so incredible.
The color really wows me too. I love the color. Good job. And it's called the Bamboo Slim.
Yeah.
But I just used these on a little jam, a little jazz jam that I played recently. And it was so good because it gives me such a like a nice light feel. And I could play like little cowbells and bells and not feel like the attack won't be too heavy, you know?
Yeah, you're not overpowering anything. That's for sure. But, you know, it's amazing. But just I want to talk about the A&E private sessions. What was that about?
Oh, my gosh. You did your homework.
Sir, hey, down with you, and I knew you were a firecracker, so I had to light the fuse to get prepared for this one.
Okay, that was my experience playing with Pat Benatar.
Right,
hero,
yeah.
heroine. That sounds like okay. She is incredible, and I got to meet Spider and Pat while on tour with an incredible artist named Keaton Simons. He's an amazing singer-songwriter. And we were opening as a duo for Pat Benatar and REO Speedwagon. And I guess Spider saw me play Cajon. And they knew they were doing this like private sessions thing. And he's like, we want to do acoustic versions of the hits. I couldn't believe it. I was like, okay, yeah, cool, man. Yeah, I'll be there. Uh-huh. Mm-hmm. I got to play the song We Belong, you know?
Yeah.
We Belong,
yeah.
Like one of my most favorite songs of life. I got to play that with Pat Benatar and Spider Giraldo on A&E.
Yeah. Does it get any deeper than that when you think about it, right?
You know what's so cool is like when that show happened, I just, you know, you play music because you love it and you get these opportunities. You're talking about fate and like the doors opening and all that stuff. And I feel like my whole attitude during my career has been like, if this was it, I would be so proud.
Yeah.
And it was like with Raining Jane, when we were touring those colleges and like 5 to 7 people would be there. I would be like, you know, if this was it, I don't think this is it. But if this was it, then it would be like, wow, I bought a van with my friends and we played music and we did the thing. But it just kept unfolding. And it's through a lot of like determination, but it's also, it has to be in the joy of the thing, or else you're never going to get past the failures. Do you know what I mean? Like, you're never going to get past the things that make you feel terrible about yourself or like bad about yourself, because it's not going to be all sunshine and sparkles, you know?
You know, well said. This is very, very profound at many different levels. You know, a person that, you know, that has regrets lives in the past. They're regretting what they did. A person that has anxiety where they're worried is living in the future. It's living in the now that gives us peacefulness and this purposeful kind of life.
Yes.
You are in the now all the time. You live in the moment, in the now, at this point right now. This is where Mona is, and she's going nowhere else because she's too busy being in the moment. This is an incredible natural skill that you got from your heritage, from your family, from your upbringing, from your journey and your path, which means it gives you great responsibility, Mona. You have great responsibility to maintain this level of attitude and to continue pursuing it, because you've got thousands of fans that are joining us here, people that are just enjoying your journey, and you are lifting people, which means you are inspiring people to aspire.
So cool.
This is absolutely deep at the highest level.
Thank you, Dom.
Who I thank, Mona. You are a wonderful person. You know, David gives us this opportunity to come by and have this wonderful chance to let people, you know, get to know you more about what's happening. I've now gotten to know you more. I think you bust me up. You are so funny. You are such a funny person. But here's the key thing. I want to organize that meal with your mom, and I want to get to the house, and I'm going to bring my own chair. I'm going to sit down. We're going to play music. We're going to dance. We're going to eat.
Yes.
We're going to talk about the old days. We're going to talk about some of my Middle Eastern heritage. We're going to go back, and we're going to have this incredible fun, and the journey is going to be committed, but we're going to be doing it in the now.
I love it. I can't wait. I'm really looking forward to it, and I feel so happy and humbled that I got to be in conversation with you. Thank you, Dom.
We will do this again for sure, Mona. I thank you so much. Ladies and gentlemen, please, Mona Tavakota, you are absolutely wonderful. Safe travel. Stay safe. My blessings to you and your family. And we'll touch base soon.
Thanks, Tom. Bye, everybody. Thank you. Thank you. I love you, Vader. I love you, Chad.
Thank you, Mona. Boy, she is just absolutely fantastic. You know, as we do this, I get a kick out of this, because this is like intensity at the highest level. Listen, with Mona, when you watch, go back and watch this interview, I ask you all to sit in a chair. Put a freaking seatbelt on. She's going to take you for a ride. She's incredible the way she speaks. She's incredible with her passion. And she just has an incredible story for everyone to take in and listen to. We do this here on Tuesdays at 2 o'clock Eastern Standard Time. Next week, December 1st, we've got Zachary Alford. Zachary is unbelievable. David Bowie, the B-52s, Gwen Stefani, Bruce Springsteen. We're going to get some stories from him that are going to be absolutely fantastic to share. Join us again. Thank you, everyone at Vader. Chad Brandolini, thank you so much for organizing this and making this happen. He's the switcher behind this, making this happen, which is so professional. Thank you, Alan Vader, the Vader Percussion Company. You guys are making great product. You are allowing us to reach people at a high level. I'll see you all next week. Thanks so much, Dom Famulara. I'm out of here. Thanks, guys.